I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. The weather isn't the only thing that's still got some heat behind it. Although Congress is in recess, hot-button topics such as immigration and sequestration are still in the news. And both sides are trying to pass different changes to the Farm Bill and win the right to say, oh snap, to the opposition. This hour, Representatives Emanuel Cleaver and Kevin Yoder join us to talk about these issues and shed some light on where Congress might be headed when it goes back into session come September. Later, Brian McTavish is back with the weekend to-do list. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Congress has passed just 22 bills so far this year. A resolution to the debt ceiling remains elusive. Budget negotiations remain stalled. Tax reform is going nowhere. And the Farm Bill is stuck. So is immigration reform. Today, an update on all things Congress with a Democrat and a Republican who strive to work there. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver represents Missouri's 5th District. He's a Democrat. And Congressman, always good to have you. Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Congressman Kevin Yoder is also here. He represents Kansas's 3rd District. He's a Republican. Congressman, good morning to you, too.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Congressman Yoder, you and I just talked a week or so ago about your trip to the border with Mexico. This is a trip that has shaped your position on immigration reform going forward. Tell us about it. In fact, also tell us about the body you saw floating down the Rio Grande when you were there, right in front of your eyes.
Sure. We took a trip with several other members of Congress a couple of weeks ago to the Mexican-American border.
Yeah.
We traveled to California, Arizona, and Texas and got a chance to see many of the challenges we face in securing our borders and ensuring that we can protect the rule of law and the sovereignty of this country. We're spending billions of dollars at the border trying to resolve some of the immigration challenges our country faces and a lot of the drug trafficking that's occurring. We start out the Tijuana-San Diego border and really saw some of the really successful changes they've made there over the years. In 91, 92, they had 500,000 arrests at the border some 20 years ago, and this year they've had 24,000. And they've got many
because they've shut it down so tightly.
Yeah, in many places they have dual fencing. They've got an initial fence and then a primary fence and then a secondary fence with stadium lighting and overhead flying and infrared and motion sensors. And so they've really been able to reduce what was very porous at one point. And then you went all the way over to contrast in Texas along the Rio Grande, which is really wide open. And it's going to be very challenging, I think, to secure that border in a way that we can feel that we're properly controlling who comes in and out of the country and the drugs that are being trafficked in. And look, we're never going to come up with a 100% solution. It's like coming up with a neighborhood that's 100% free of crime. But we've got to do better than we're doing in certain portions where we have folks that can come in the broad daylight and bring in tons of drugs. This was really the danger of all this, and the impact on the region was highlighted, I think, when we were on the Rio Grande and there was a dead body just floating down the river. And I think it underscores.
Yeah, how did the security, I'm not sure who you were with, Border Patrol at that point, how did they react to what you were seeing?
Well, they immediately, called it in and they immediately, dealt with how they resolve, getting the body out of the water. And I asked some questions, what happens next? You try to find a family. And I think it turned out he was a Honduran individual. And what we've seen actually is a lot of the increase in illegal immigration into the country has been from countries south of Mexico. That's where they're seeing the big bump. In new people and coming across
of
there.
Legal so, or illegal?
Illegal.
Illegal.
A lot of the
yeah.
illegal crossings are actually folks that are coming, riding a train up through Mexico on top of the train all the way up to the border and then coming through. But what happens is, Steve, our border is only as strong as its weakest point. And so as we've shut down and really worked hard in certain areas like California and parts of Arizona, a lot of it's then flown into migrated down to Texas. And it's not just the illegal immigration in the country, but it's the drug trafficking. There are tons and tons of drugs being floated across the Rio Grande and to great risk and injury. And that was noticed when a man was floating down the river face down that had drowned apparently in the in the river.
So as a result of that, Congressman, your trip and what you saw there, you've come back and announced that you're very much opposed now to the immigration reform bill that the U.S. Senate has passed in a bipartisan way. Your thinking there is what?
Well, I think that I applaud the Senate for working together and trying to find a solution. And I think we had members of both parties that had impact and input into that bill. And I think the Senate certainly advanced the cause of getting immigration reform, which I think has to be achieved in Washington, D.C. The current system we have is really bad for everybody, from immigrants and non-immigrants. We incentivize illegal immigration and we discourage legal immigration. We've got it all flipped around. And so we have to have immigration reform. I'm concerned that we might do immigration reform and not fully solve the border security problems in 10 years from now, Steve, when Emmanuel's back on your program, and we're talking about these issues again. We're dealing with another 10 million folks that are here illegally. The other thing is it's not just about border security, although that, I think, is a primary component that has to be solved first. We also need a good visa entry-exit program. 40% of the folks that are here have overstayed visas. Part of that is, Steve, we don't know when people leave. They come here on an education, work visa, travel visa. There's no way to tell when they depart, so they stay longer. So that's important. And I also learned in terms of the border security portion is that we're not going to be able to stop every single person coming through. People are they tunnel under, they fly, they have folks flying over and dropping drugs off and flying back on little like gliders of some sort. I mean, they get pretty creative, but we've got to do a much, much better job. We've got to use fencing. We've got to have motion detectors, infrared, the whole thing. It's going to be costly, but I think it's critical to restore the rule of law as part of an immigration reform.
Right. But I thought the Senate bill that's coming out has beefed up border security measures in it.
It has, although I don't think it was done in conjunction with the Border Patrol folks that are out on the front lines and ensuring that we do the right things. They threw more troops at the border. They threw more resources at it. But I think we have to be it's going to have to be an integrated approach. It's not just building a fence, although that is part of fencing is definitely part of it. But there's a more integrated approach. The bigger issue, though, Steve, I think, in the difference between the House and the Senate bill is in the House bills is that border security, I think, has to be assured first as part of immigration reform. One of the great challenges we have, I think, in the 1986 reform is that we were promised immigration reform in exchange for a pathway to citizenship for folks that were here illegally. Those folks became citizens, and the border was never secured. And we're still in a position where we've had, 11 million people here. So what we want to do is fix the problem once and for all. But I agree in that the Senate approach and that whatever we do end up doing is going to have to be bipartisan, and it's going to have to be both parties voting for things they may not like in order to get something done.
Congressman Cleaver, my sense now of immigration reform, given that folks like Congressman Yoder are peeling off the bill, that the bill's in big trouble in the House, what do you see ahead for this measure, and where do you come down on it?
Well, I do think it's in trouble. I can appreciate the thoughtful way the congressman looks at this immigration issue. I mean, it's thoughtful. I think there are a lot of people who are opposed to it who are not thoughtful.
Yeah.
And I do think I was born and raised in Texas. most of my family's still there. If you want to hear an immigration story, go to mm-hmm. Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just stop anybody on this. Talk to my daddy. I mean, mm-hmm. anybody. I think the Senate bill it may represent the best thing that we can get, and I think that I would like a higher level of specificity with regard to the border issues, how are we actually going to keep people out? I'm not talking about the expenditures. I'm talking about exactly what we're going to do. I would, however, support the bill in hopes that we could refine it in time because at least we began the process of dealing with immigration. Right now we're doing nothing, and it's broken, and people are coming in and by the thousands. And President Obama, contrary to what a lot of people think, has exported returned more immigrants than any
That's
president
right.
in history.
That's right.
But it's still a problem. And so we've got to deal with, I think, this problem in a way that it's not, I agree, it's not going to be acceptable to a lot of people, but I think we still have to do it and then try to improve it as time
moves on. Just to be clear, if you don't pass this bill, this attempt at bipartisanship out of the Senate, the cause of immigration reform will be pushed back what, years?
I think it may be, clearly it's not going to resurface over the next 3 years during this presidency. And depending on who the next presidential candidates are and how that issue is debated in the presidential election will determine when it comes up. But this would be losing, I think, a pretty big chance of getting something through.
That's the risk you're taking, Congressman Yoder.
Let me address that. And I appreciate, you know, folks like Emanuel and others in the House that are saying, look, we've got to find a solution, and maybe the Senate isn't the right solution, but no solution is worse than this solution. I certainly understand where Emanuel's coming from on that. I think the House needs the opportunity to work its process. I think the House has several bills that have already passed out of the Judiciary Committee that need to go to the floor and be debated. I don't think it's necessarily fair to expect the House to just take up and debate the Senate bill as is. We've had committees working for years on their own proposals, and so I know I will tell you, for all the criticism maybe House leadership comes under, the Speaker and the Majority Leader have committed to moving legislation.
Yeah.
And there are people in our party who say don't move a thing because anything could lead to something we don't like, and
right.
anything we don't like we don't want to have done. And I'm not one of those people. I think we need a solution. I do think there are things that the House can do to improve those bills that will have some components of the Senate bill. I think the Senate bill doesn't do enough to encourage STEM visas into our country and to have science, technology, engineering, and math students be able to stay. It keeps some country caps and things that I think are bad for immigration. So I think there are positive reforms that even Emanuel and others, I think that we can work on our own bipartisan bill in the House. That's my hope, that we'll maybe go to conference with the Senate bill.
Is that a realistic hope? Can you get a bipartisan bill on immigration reform out of the House?
Well, I think it's going to have to be, because I think we have certain members in my party that won't vote for anything. And we have such a slim majority that means that whatever – if something passes the House, I think it almost guarantees has to have Democratic votes. There's been a group of Republicans and Democrats, some of Emanuel's friends, some of mine, who have been meeting for years to work on this, who have some really solid ideas that I think would really improve the Senate bill both on security and on work visas. And so my hope is they'll have a chance to work that process, although, you know, it's very difficult to get things done in Washington right now, and I think we're both frustrated about
that. Well, speaking of that, immigration reform isn't the only issue that Congress is stuck on right now. There's a whole host of issues, including the need to raise the debt ceiling. If it doesn't happen, of course, the U.S. faces, you know, defaulting on its debts, that crisis all over again. Meantime, Texas Senator Ted Cruz is talking about shutting down the federal government as a way to avoid funding the president's health care plan. You know, Congressman Cleaver, are we headed for another shutdown or another major, you know, showdown over this country's finances this fall? Is that where we're headed again?
Well, first of all, the Affordable Care Act is not going to be rescinded.
Overturned, yeah.
Senator Cruz is a very intelligent man, maybe one of the brightest people in the Senate. So he knows better, but the people he talks to don't. So he's doing that kind of a political statement that I think creates division. We are going to probably go to the brink again. And then we'll pass a series of continuing resolutions, a continuing resolution for the budget. I don't think we can do an omnibus CR, so I think we'll have to approve a number of important pieces of legislation: budget, debt ceiling, and agriculture.
Yeah.
And there may be a couple of others that we absolutely have to approve. But I think that will be to get us through the end of the calendar year. And when we come back in January, we'll start over, hoping to get some kind of a grand bargain.
But Congressman, if we go to the brink again, to use your words, I mean, I get the sense that, you know, I'm weary of this topic as a talk show host. As a political reporter, I'm guessing the American people are more than weary of it. Are we really going to go to the brink again and sort of have a big hullabaloo over, is the government going to shut down? Are we going to default on our debt? I mean, all those things all over again?
I think so. I don't want it to happen, but I think it's going to happen. And Moody's has warned us about a credit downgrading if we go to the brink again.
Meaning interest rates might go up that we're paying on our debt right now.
Yeah. And China could eventually really hurt us by, raising the interest rate, which means that our interest rates here at home would also rise. But I think that there's so much division in Washington right now that I cannot imagine, and I want to be wrong on this, but I cannot imagine us smoothly passing the continuing resolutions that we need to pass and going home in December and saying Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah.
I mean, if I'm tired of it, how tired of it are you?
I'm sick of it. It drives me crazy. I was on an airplane. A woman asked me, "So what did you do?" And I said, "I work for the government." and because I was, look.
You don't want to go into it. You don't want to stir up all that stuff. All the flack you're going to get in a moment
that's
like
right.
that.
I mean, we have a 13% approval rating. I mean, Satan has a 15. So
yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
he's doing better. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Congressman Yoder, how about you? How tired of you are all this? And you're just in your second term right now.
Yeah, I'm about in my 30th month or so in serving in Congress, and we've had government shutdown threats, fiscal cliff, default threats, sequester. I mean, it's one crisis to another. And I think there's crisis fatigue in the country.
Oh, jeez. Tell me about it.
And I mean in a way in which almost folks don't even take it seriously anymore. And so whether it's the president or the media or whoever it may be, Republicans or Democrats say, if we don't do the following, the world is going to cave in tomorrow. I think people they're numb to that threat because they've seen so many times Congress go to the brink, go to the edge, and then pull back from it. And so I don't know that folks will really even take a lot of this stuff as a real serious threat because they've heard it all before. And so I think there's a fatigue in the cliff default, shutdown.
Does that change the politics then? I mean, does Congress, surely Congress, many members recognize that. Mm-hmm. And given that, does that begin to sort of, in its own weird way, pave a path towards resolution that avoids all the brinkmanship, I guess, is the word.
It might. I think there are certainly many Republicans who are saying that a strategy of shutting down government or a strategy of trying to take us to the brink to exact some sort of result out of the administration is probably a fool's errand, and it creates more uncertainty in the economy. I mean, our underlying goal that both parties, I think, are focused on is how do we create jobs and put people back to work? And it's hard to do that when Washington's sort of creating crises. I will say, though, when it comes to things like the debt ceiling, I mean, Moody says a couple of things. They say, you guys have to govern effectively. We're concerned that you don't have the stability to find solutions. And that's a huge problem and one that,
man,
I know both of us take very seriously. But they also say, you need a solution to your long-term debt problems. And that's something that hasn't happened. And so you can pass debt ceiling after debt ceiling. We could raise it, 10 more trillion. But it doesn't solve the problem of how we're ever going to pay that back, how we avoid the crisis that occurs with a country that's so laden with debt.
I thought sequestration, this sort of automatic spending cuts that were brought about a year or two ago, I thought that's what that was all about as a way to get at the overall size of the government debt.
Well, it certainly has put a lid on discretionary spending, but discretionary spending's maybe 35-40% of the budget. The majority of the budget is in programs that are autopilot programs. You either qualify for them and get them or you don't.
We're Medicare, about Social Security, Medicaid, all
exactly,
those.
Exactly, farm programs, SNAP programs, debt and interest payments. And the big concern is if we don't reform those programs and deal with the budget as a whole, I think not only are we not being clear and direct with the American people about what our real fiscal prognosis is and what the solutions have to be, we're also putting off these tough decisions. And what's going to happen, Steve, is there are predictions now when you look at the numbers that our debt and interest payments in 10 years may be as high as $800 or $900 billion a year. That's more than we spend in our entire national defense.
Yeah.
That's more than we spend on health care for seniors. And so the idea that people in Kansas City in either of our districts would get up and spend a portion of their day paying debt and interest to now many foreign nations that are buying our debt, as opposed to building roads or putting people to school, instead building roads and putting people to school in China and other countries, that to me creates a long-term economic stagnation in this country that's going to be hard to get out of. And so that's another concern I think the rating agencies are worried about and all of us are. If we just continue to say, well, we'll punt this controversy, this crisis to the next year, it never goes away. It gets worse. And we have the luxury, Steve, right now of fixing these problems today. 10 years from now, the choices get much harder and the pain becomes much worse.
But there's been attempts, this grand bargain proposal that the president and the House Speaker, you know, again, using the word brink, they went to the brink on this a couple of times now. And each time, for one reason or another, they've pulled back. This was kind of a comprehensive, I guess, in some ways, approach to deal with the debt. And it can't get done. So maybe Moody's is right, Congressman Cleaver. We can't figure it out.
Well, John Boehner and President Obama actually reached an agreement in 2011 on a grand bargain, but the Speaker was unable to sell it when he got back over to the Hill. You know, he later said that you know they didn't actually have a deal.
There was something there they were talking about, yeah.
And so I think if John Boehner had the freedom, he would strike a deal with the president. I mean, I like John Boehner. He's an old-fashioned Ohio politician who wants to get things done. And I was talking with Eric Cantor. I didn't know this. He said, look, I was a development lawyer before I got into politics.
Cantor was?
Eric Cantor.
Yeah, the second in command, right.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And so he said, you know, my whole life working as an attorney, as a development lawyer, was making deals. And so he said, that's what I want to do, which led me to believe what I think a lot of people believe, and that is they can't do a deal because there is a group of people in that caucus, you guys don't call it, and the
conference,
yeah. Republican conference, who were just not going to go along with anything, particularly if it's balanced, if it generates revenue, they consider it a tax increase.
So there can't be additional revenue, this thinking goes, to go along with the spending cuts. They just want purely spending cuts.
That's right.
Okay.
And we'll never, we can't go along with that. One of the reasons is that, you know, we have some programs that are critical to the survival of our nation as it is now. And those programs must be preserved and operating at the highest possible level of efficiency. But there are those who will not go along with that. And I think John Boehner wants to continue to be the speaker. And I think a deal pretty much eliminates him as the speaker. I think he'd have difficulty retaining his speakership.
Well, maybe the deal might trump the need for John Boehner to be reelected as speaker.
Well, I think
what's
he
more
wants
important
to be the speaker.
Here in the long run. You know, I mean, there are even some news organizations, Congressman Yoder, that have begun pulling back on their coverage of Congress under the theory that nothing's getting done there anyway. Why devote our resources to an institution that simply isn't moving the ball? So we're going to go out and cover other stuff.
Well, I mean, there isn't a lot moving right now, certainly, and it's, I think, frustrating for both of us. I will say there's plenty of blame to go around. You know, in the last 50 years, Steve, we've balanced the budget 6 times as a country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 times in 50 years. That, to me, speaks to a bipartisan problem. We've had Republicans and Democratic presidents. And, look, both parties like to point the finger at each other, but both parties have overseen this problem. And so the years we did the best, frankly, was you had a Democratic president, Republican House and Senate in the 90s. You had 4 years of balanced budgets. And so sometimes when you have bipartisanship, you have one party running one branch and another the other branch, you actually get some of the best legislation. And so I've been really frustrated that that hasn't occurred.
I was going to say it's not happening. Yeah.
It's certainly not occurring. You know, Steve, whatever we do, I think it needs to be a solution that actually solves the problem. Simply nibbling at it and convincing the American public, well, we did a little bit here and a little bit there. That just, you know, kicks up a lot of dust, and we're still in the crisis. I think we need to solve this long-term debt crisis. We need to do it over a long period of time. I don't think we need, you know, an immediate austerity approach that some warn against. I think that's what we're trying to avoid. The problem is, Steve, you get so far down the line, if we don't foresee these things and actually solve them now, you get to a point where the pain, you actually have to do austerity. You actually have to do immediate deep cuts. We don't want to do that. We want a long 10-year plan. Look, the House put together a bill that would balance the budget in 10 years. That window's probably longer than many folks would like. It's probably shorter than some others would like. But there are pathways to get this done. You know, Steve, in the last Congress, I was one of six Republicans in the entire House that didn't sign the Grover Norquist Pledge out of 242. So 236 did, six didn't. Not because I think we ought to raise taxes. Frankly, I think taxes are too high. But I'm also trying to be rational and understand that we're going to have give and take to get to a solution. And if you say, I'm not going to consider anything the other side wants from the outset, we're not going to get anywhere.
So you're saying you're willing to consider a plan that would include both spending cuts and revenue increases of some kind?
Well, it's not my preference, certainly, and it's not something that I think would be the best policy. I'll tell you, I think we have increased, you know, at the beginning of the year, the Bush tax cuts expired for upper income brackets. That was the president's campaign platform. He got that tax increase. Taxes went up on Social Security. Every American, Steve, you got one. Everyone at the studio here got a tax increase when their Social Security went back up.
Right.
There are a lot of taxes coming down on the Obama health care bill. You've got excise tax on insurance. You've got a tax on medical equipment. You've got a tax on capital gains. I mean, I think there are roughly about $3 trillion in new taxes coming over the next 10 years. So I will say I think the tax component's already there. But at the same time, as we go through tax reform and as we look at how to reform the tax code and flatten it out, if there's a way in which we can find revenue that will help my friends on the other side of the aisle join in something that would reform our entitlement programs and cut spending, some of the things they're going to need to be able to go to their voters and say, we got a fair deal, I'm willing to look at those solutions because I think the result of not doing anything is much worse for the American people.
But let me,
I'm looking for a little hope here, Congressman Cleaver.
Well, let me
be a glimmer of something to hang on to before I go out and jump off the bridge here.
Federal revenue is today the lowest it's been in generations. The federal revenue as a share of the GDP, gross domestic product, is 14.9%. And for the last 60 years, it's averaged 18%. So, you know, this idea that federal spending is out of control is not borne out with the facts. Now, do we need to reduce the deficit? Absolutely. But I made a mistake earlier today. Ronald Reagan had three deficit reduction programs, not two, but three. Each of them dealt with revenue and cuts, and I mean he is the god for the GOP.
And yet you're saying he himself raised taxes a few
times.
That's
right.
Yeah,
three times.
Yeah,
in 8 years. So we need to have a balanced approach, and I'm willing to make cuts. I mean I'm willing. I didn't like the Senate cut on SNAP, $4 billion.
Food stamps.
Yeah. But I was gonna vote for it because I thought, you got to make compromises in this business.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Cloyd.
Well, I would just say the president campaigned on a 3-to-1 approach, a 2.5-to-1 approach, where we would say you're going to cut spending $3 for every dollar taxes went up. You know, at the end of the year, the president said, I want to raise eliminate some of the Bush tax cuts. I want capital gains rates to go up. They went up from 15 to 20%. Plus, you have a 3.8% tax increase on that. So now what was once a 15% transaction is a 23.8% taxable transaction. You have these taxes.
You're saying taxes are going up.
I'm saying they are going up. They're going to continue to go up. And so I don't think we can tax our way out of this solution.
I agree.
Out of this problem. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more of a political issue than it is anything. But, Steve, at the end of the day, what we really need, and I think what we can agree on, is job growth. You get the economy to grow and you can hold the line on spending.
Right.
That's the best pathway to get there.
Let's take a break here. We're talking with our two members of Congress from our neck of the woods here, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th District, Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District. We'll talk about the farm bill. We'll talk about a new terminal for KCI and a whole lot more in our second half. Plus, Brian McTavish will be here with your weekend to-do list. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're visiting now with Congressman Kevin Yoder, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. In June, the House took a couple of votes on the farm bill. One vote had to do with removing food stamps from the farm bill. Food stamps have traditionally been a part of the farm bill going back many, many decades. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver from Kansas City took to the House floor and had a whole lot to say about that move.
I believe that this bill is doing enormous damage not only to the body politic, but to this nation. and we, the elected leaders of the United States Congress, this is not some little club. We are the Congress of the United States of America, the most powerful nation on this planet. And we can take care of all of the people. There are poor children in rural areas that I represent. And I will never turn my back on them. I will never turn my back on children in the urban core. Mr. Speaker, I object to this bill because this bill is not just going to create tension among us, but the people of this country who depend on us. They depend on us. It's not like they can go to an alternative body to redress their concerns. If we are about anything, it is about trying to take care of these people.
Now, Congressman, you weren't talking just about cuts in food stamps. You were talking about this procedural move to remove food stamps from the larger farm bill where it's the two have been married together for so many decades. Why were you so concerned and so upset about that move?
Two things. One, it's been 50 years since the farmers asked that we connect all food-related bills to the farm bill, which I actually refer to it in my district as a food bill.
Mm-hmm.
And 500 farm organizations from across the country asked that we not separate the farm bill. And I know that that's probably strange because most people would expect
farmers to be more conservative.
That's right.
Yeah.
But they wanted it together.
Mm-hmm.
That's for some real reasons. And the other reason was that there are a lot of things being said about food stamps that are just not factual, and some of them, frankly, had a racial tone to them. And so, I don't like to talk on the floor. I never go to the floor to do speeches. I do a 1 minute every now and then, just because the hostility is always there. But this bothered me more than most things because I think we are. It's one of those bills that helps to push us further and further apart. There's a symbiotic relationship between the rural areas and the urban core. We need each other. I was talking to a Farm Bureau group in Higginsville two or three nights ago, and I explained to them, and I think they understand now, that if you take $40 billion out of the SNAP program.
Food stamps, yeah.
Food stamps. Mm-hmm. Who sells the food to the Agriculture Department for the program? The farmers. So they're losing $40 billion.
Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill said something interesting this week to one of your points, which is that this idea that food stamps are used mostly in the big cities is a misnomer. It's rural Americans who rely on it in some ways at a higher proportional rate than city dwellers.
In my district, Saline County has a 14% 14% of its population use food stamps.
That's east down I-70.
Yes,
yeah.
About 80 miles from here. Jackson County is at 10.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Almost every school in Saline and Lafayette counties have more than 50% of their students connected with the SNAP program in some way.
Yeah.
I went out to Independence speaking to the Chamber of Commerce out there, and I read off the list of schools in the district in Independence where they had more than 50% of the students on food stamps. These guys are standing around there stunned because so much negative information is going out that people actually believe things that are just absolutely not true. And most of the people on food stamps work.
Yeah.
Every day. They just don't earn enough.
Let me get our listeners involved here. 816-235-2888. If you have a question for Congressman Kevin Yoder, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate, at KCUR.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR. At KCUR UpToDate. Now, House leaders, Congressman Yoder, are trying to cut $40 billion from the food stamp program. They're talking about doing this fall, which is twice the amount of cuts proposed in a House bill that failed in June. and that's threatening to derail efforts to complete a farm bill before all these ag programs expire at the end of September. Congressman Yoder, why are House members suddenly doubling down on the amount of cuts to food stamps, and how will you vote on that?
Well, I'm not familiar with the behind the scenes on that issue. Mm-hmm. I haven't been part of those meetings, so I'm not really sure what the rationale is on that. Let me say first, Manuel spoke very eloquently on this issue. I was in the chair for a lot of this debate, and it became very emotional. It became very, heart-wrenching for a lot of folks. And so certainly this is a very important issue, and it needs to be dealt with in a respectful way, and that we all understand. I think Manuel's made points that the SNAP program is a very widely used program in our country. One in seven Americans are on food stamps at this point.
Well, if House leaders want to double down and cut it by $40 billion, can you support that?
Well, I have to look at what the cuts are. I will say this: I've not seen the particular proposal.
Yeah.
I did support the original proposal on the floor that made roughly equal reductions to the farm portion of the bill, which was about a $20 billion cut, and about $20 billion in reductions on food stamp growth. Now, the farm portion is only about 20% of the bill. So a lot of Republicans are saying, well, why aren't these cuts equitable then? If this farm bill is 80% food stamps, why are we calling it a farm bill? And I have a lot of constituents who say, you guys pile all these issues together, you don't have any transparency, and you sort of use these things to bargain and pass bad legislation. So
did you favor the idea of removing food stamps from the farm bill then?
Well, I know the result is going to be they're probably going to be combined. But I didn't, at least until I started hearing some of the speeches from Manuel and others, understand why there'd be such a passionate objection to that, because many of my constituents are passionate that we shouldn't combine all these things together.
So how did you vote on that?
So I voted yes for both bills.
To go ahead and separate food stamps?
Well, we didn't have a vote on whether to separate it. We had two votes. One was on the farm bill itself, which was just farm policy.
You voted yes on
that. And I voted yes
on that.
And we had another bill, which was farm policy and food stamp policy combined, and I voted yes on that.
And Congressman, Cleaver, how did you vote on those two bills?
Oh, I voted against them.
Against both?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Kevin Yoder, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it was just saying that we had both those options. And I think what the speaker's been trying to figure out is, I guess, how to manage a bill that can actually pass both chambers. We have this continuing dynamic, Steve. We have a conservative House and a liberal Senate. And you got to get majorities in both. So that's going to take give and take. And the original bill actually was negotiated with Democrats on the committee, and I thought it was going to pass as a bipartisan bill. At the very end, there was an amendment that went on the bill, Steve, that required work or volunteering to receive food stamps. That amendment went on the bill, and Democrats said that's a bridge too far. We can't do that. And so the bill went down. And so I think we will see some policy on it. I will go back again, though, and Steve say we've seen a huge growth in food stamp recipients because the economy has been struggling and unemployment so high. And so the end result of all this and the undercurrent has to be we've got to focus more time and energy, both parties, on job creation in the country, because that's ultimately what gets people off the food stamp programs the quickest.
Congressman Cleaver, how nervous are farmers in your district about the fact we haven't passed an ag bill yet?
They are, I don't think nervous, they're angry.
Mm-hmm.
because they can't begin to do long-term planning. Most people,
without it, yeah.
And farming is requires as much long-term planning as anything that takes place.
And Steve, that's big in Kansas as well. Obviously, I grew up on a farm.
Absolutely.
I talked to my dad who still farms. I mean, this is certainly...
You're a Western Kansas boy.
Yeah, right. I grew up near Yoder, Kansas. So, I mean, this is an issue that needs to be resolved for both Missouri and
Kansas.
That's
cool. You've got a Yoder, Kansas, and he's got a Cleaver Boulevard, but you don't have a Cleaver like Missouri yet. You're still a little short of where Congressman
time.
Yoder is here, having a city named after you.
Yeah, I thought that it was wrong for him to get into public office just to get a town named after
Let's
him.
Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Congressman Kevin Yoder, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver with us today. Jared from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Well, I was just kind of curious about how if they think that food stamps and then also minimum wage coincide. Like, you know, if you don't make enough money, then you have to go on government programs like, you know, Section 8 and food stamps, that if we were to raise the minimum wage to make it a more livable wage, that if that were to help, you know, take some stress off the government for those programs.
Yeah.
And I'll take my answer off air.
Yeah, thank you. Congressman Cleaver, you want to take that?
I'm sorry.
Congressman Yoder, do you want to grab that?
Oh, so you were acting like you didn't hear that one?
No, I didn't hear the question.
Just kidding. Well, you know, certainly I think higher paying jobs and better job growth is important to getting people off these programs. That's just sort of the point I was just making before the caller asked.
The question is about the relationship between minimum wage and SNAP.
I don't support raising the minimum wage. I think that that actually ends up hurting people on the lower spectrum. It ends up putting people out of work. You'll see it
because the wage goes up and small employers can't afford to pay people that much. They let them go.
Yeah, I mean, well, why not pay them 20 or 30? I mean, there's an impact on this, and so. But I do think what the issue is: we need better job creation in this country, not more federal mandates on job creators.
Should there be a relationship between SNAP, the food stamp program, and the minimum wage, Congressman Cleaver?
Absolutely, there is a relationship. And I think people don't realize this, but one half of the SNAP households are people who go to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't earn enough money to take care of their family. I think it's $23,500 a year for a family of four. And if you work at one of these fast food restaurants, you're not going to earn enough.
Yeah.
So here's what most people don't realize has happened. Then the federal government subsidizes those fast food restaurants. Why? Because then we have to come in and step in to make sure that family can survive. So they get food stamps and they go to work every day.
Yeah.
And so the public is subsidizing all of these places that are paying their employees $7.25 an hour.
Let's go to Bill from Merriam on the Kansas side. Bill, good morning.
Yes. How are you doing? I've got a this may not sound like it, but it's serious. I had wondered if both of the congressmen had ever considered having a joint or several joint town hall meetings. They're both kind of on different sides of the spectrum, but they're also sensible. And I just think it would give some of the audiences something to think about.
Joint town hall meetings. Good idea, Kevin Yoder.
Yeah, we'd be happy to. We've done several forums. We just did this one this morning at Union Station for the Greater Kansas City Chamber, but certainly one, and I think that's open to the public that wants to come, but I think one where we did let folks come would be great. We certainly don't agree on everything, but I think we both try very hard to listen to each other. Frankly, Steve, I learn a lot from doing these forums with Emanuel because I get to kind of hear his argument and he gets to kind of hear mine. And
why don't you guys, Congressman Cleaver, go on a little tour around the area and present both sides to help maybe better educate folks as to where these issues are?
Because he's a Kansas Jayhawk, and I don't think that we can overcome that.
Yeah. Yes, you can.
I actually think that's a good idea. The caller probably has a good idea. We were together this morning at a forum, and we don't disagree, but I agree. We learn from each other, and we don't get angry at each other because we disagree. That might be a good idea.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time here. I want to thank Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th. Always good to have you guys here. We didn't get to all our phone calls, didn't get to all our topics today. Come on back sometime soon. We'll do it again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.